because at first I didn't want to put on the list the ones that were going to, if anybody found out, would put me in jail. Okay. Because I didn't want to have that kind of information out there. And so when I was doing the list, I started doing it, and we broke it down, and we kind of sat down and looked at that list and took it down to the areas of, you know, some family stuff, some friends, situations where the, you know, that from school, from high school, from college, from, you know, from my marriage. And man, there were just so many things that I was going to have to make amends for. And what kind of happened was, is that I'm going to talk about some of the things I remember from that moment. That's 35, 36 years ago, 30, you know, when I was going through this, the initial time and sitting down with my sponsor. But some of the things that were happening, I can remember, you know, having to make that amends to my wife. You know, and I had, you know, done the normal amends that husbands do when they're in trouble, you know, like, you know, I'll never do that again. It was just bad luck. I don't know why, you know, it happened. But the things about it was, it really came down to the amends I was going to make weren't going to be about the words that I said. It was going to be about the action I took. Because, you know, there's a lot of words out there. I mean, I was a professional word doer, you know. I mean, I could manipulate people into doing what I wanted to do. As I was going back to my list, and you know, and I made it amends to my wife. I made it to the best of my ability. And I can remember, even though you make amends to somebody, it doesn't mean it's a complete amends. There's going to be some things that are going to come out later that are going to be, first, total denial of my part in it. One of them for my wife's situation was the fact that during my drinking, her best friends that she grew up with, they were like close together. And they came down to where I lived in the Allegheny National Forest for a weekend. And that was, to be honest, that was a real mistake by them. Because they didn't know what they were going to see. And they didn't know what they were going to experience. And all these people, to be honest, because, see, my self-esteem is so low about myself. I didn't know that's what it was. These guys, people had continued their lives and gone on to school to be, you know, lawyers and this and this and their husbands. And they're all, and I'm working in a color chemical factory, you know, just surviving. And they come down and I feel like a piece of crap. So I have to make them feel small, feel like they're less than. You know, like, well, you did this and this and this and this. And I didn't realize that's what I was doing at the time. But that moment, that weekend, I ended that relationship with my wife and her friends. That was a relationship she had since she was like 10 years old with these people. And I didn't know that. And then one day, about 2.5 years in sobriety, my wife said to me about her friends. And she said, well, my friends won't ever be around us anymore because of what you did to them. And and out of her mouth, every detail of that weekend came out. And I was in like total denial. I cannot believe you think that happened. I don't believe it happened. We were like visiting my aunts back home. And I just was like a crazy man. And I did what I always do. I ran upstairs, locked the bedroom door, and went in there by myself. And for about an hour, I sat there and looked at it. I saw the truth. I saw all the things I had done. And I went back down and I made amends to my wife for that situation. And I thought that amends was over. I really did. I really thought that was complete. You know, God knew it wasn't complete, but at that moment, it was as best that I could do with that kind of an amends there. You know, I can remember like the different situations in there, you know, where I dealt with my in-laws. Oh my God, you know. You know, it's amazing how my mother-in-law forgave me, you know. And she forgave me because I was sober for about a year at that time. And her father, who is a well-known person here in Erie, but also a in and out of the AA for, I don't know, 25 years, in and out, in and out, in and out. We, you know, and everybody in between the government and different kind of honky-tonks, they all knew him. But he never stayed sober for very long. He'd be in and out until it finally, you know, took his life. And she was kind of proud of the fact that I had been sober for a whole year and was starting to do some positive things. And she forgave me. My father-in-law looked at me and says, no, you know, my father-in-law did not want my wife to stay with me after I quit drinking or even when I was drinking. And so he was still on the outside and I couldn't do anything that was going to change him. All the words I could possibly say meant nothing to him. He was about action. Even if he wasn't a good person, even if he wasn't that, he did not accept my words. And I can remember being pissed off. I think I've told a story before where I'm down the Alkanon Club and I had about 2.5 years. I'm back in school. I'm feeling pretty good about myself. And there was this guy who was in the program, Butch. Not Butch P, but another Butch. And Butch had been around for a while. And he was one of my father-in-law's best friends. And I said to Butch, "Butch, what's my father-in-law think about me now?" Yeah, your father-in-law thinks you're an asshole. I'm like, what? I said, I can't. What? I was like devastated. And so I ran out of the Elkanon Club, got in my car, drove home to my wife, and said, "This is what your dad said about me." I don't know. And she's like, "What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do?" Fast forward a year later, you know, this kid who was a horrible student goes back to school to become a teacher. And not only does he do, you know, I graduated with honors and summa cum laude and all these awards that I won because of this fellowship, because of this program. And I'm in the honors convocation and the president of the university is up in front of the room and he's putting the medallion around my neck. And when I look up, my father-in-law is videotaping me. And that moment was the moment I felt that the amends that I had done had succeeded, had gone to his heart, that he felt differently about me. He accepted me for the things I did. You know, those kind of things that are the things that kind of happen, you know. And I was just thinking about some of the situations hold on 1 second here. I had my aunts, you know, when I sat down with my sponsor and we talked about how I was going to make the different amends. I had these aunts that raised me. My brother and I got passed around to 5 families in 3 states by the time we were 7 years old. And when I got passed around, you know, it created a lot of resentment. It created a lot of things in how I dealt with life and how I attacked people and how I lived and didn't allow people to be part of my life. And just use people as pawns. And my aunts, who took us in, they were like the last stop for us. We were going to end up in an orphanage in New Hampshire if it wasn't for them. And so I'm very grateful they took us in. But I'm going to tell you right now, from the time I was a little kid, I liked money. And I liked other people's money too. And I can remember, even if I had money, I would take their money. I knew where their purses were. I knew where everything that they did. You know, here are these people that gave me a chance in my life to not be in an orphanage, and I've got to steal from them, even if I don't need their money, because I'd like to have more money, because money is the only thing that mattered to me there at that time. So as I'm going so much, my sponsor says to me, "Well, kind of get an idea about how much money you might have taken from your aunts." I think, okay. So I started figuring out about what I would take per week from the time I was, I'm going to guess, 7, 8 years old, 9 years old. You know, my aunt had a beauty shop. It was attached to the house I was living in. If I wanted something, I just took it. And I figured it out. When it came down to it, it was somewhere around $15,000 to $20,000. And now I'm married. I don't have I'm in sobriety. I'm trying to go back to school. I'm not working full time. And I'm thinking to myself, well, how am I going to pay these people back? How am I going to pay my aunts back? Well, there was an answer there. And it's in the eighth and the ninth. You know, there's different ways we do this. I couldn't afford, to make an amends that makes me feel better, but hurts the rest of my family, still, is not an amends for me. And what I had to do is, my aunts lived about 100 miles from here. As my kids get, you know, my kids get older, every year I would take my kids down to the carnival back home. It lasted a whole week. We'd stay in Ridgeway, where I grew up, for a whole week. And for 15 years in a row, I would go down there for that entire week, and I would do about 50 hours of hard physical work that they needed done in that house. I would go down there, and that was my immense that I could do to them. I couldn't afford to give them cash and take away from my family, but I could give them my time and my effort. If I say it was 15 years, it might have been 20 years. I don't really know. All I know is that it became the norm for me to go there. And I felt, because I did that, that I was making the amends I had to do. You know, those people aren't going to, like, you know, my aunts, one of them, she passed away. She turned 99 about 2 years ago, and she passed away. The other one's still living. She's 96. Of course, my brother says the reason they're living is because that God said, if you take Dan in, we're going to let you live a long time, you know? And that's kind of like, wow, that's like, well, you didn't know what they were bargaining for. Okay, they really didn't. Because as a lot of people know, they got themselves a super hyper active kid, and they love me no matter what. So I made that amends. I mean, building fences, painting things, you know, cleaning windows, whatever they needed me to do. That's the way I could do it to make up for it. You know, I talk about that time with my wife. And you think, like I said, just because we do the eighth and ninth step, just because we, you know, we make those lists and we go through it. And I'm going to tell you right now, the list got smaller. You know, that same carnival back home, one of the times I was back there, and I like to say that I'm sometimes I believe that, you know, I call them Jesus and the boys. And I believe that I'm sometimes their entertainment, you know, they'll be looking down and they can see the situation that's going to occur coming up, and they yell in the other room, "Hey, come on in here, guys! This is going to be really good," and this is one of those really good moments of the eighth and ninth step. Because, see, when I was playing high school football my junior year, I went out of town for one of the games, and I left my shoes in the locker room at the out of town stadium. But I didn't want to admit it, so I got to the practice early, and I looked for a pair of shoes that was hanging from the locker. They were the same size that I wore, and I brought a marker and I put my initials inside, and I stole this kid's football shoes. Well, I had him on the list, but I don't think I was ever going to see this guy, you know? I mean, he's a pretty big dude. And I'm like, okay, don't I come back? I'm back at the same carnival back home, and I'm walking around, and I look over there, and there's Ray. I said, okay, God, I got it. I know. You brought me here. You brought me this moment. It's time to go make amends. And like I said, Jesus, the boys are yelling, "Hey, you guys, you got to see this. This is going to be so much fun." So I go over there, and he's talking to somebody. And I say, "Hey, Ray, when you get a chance, I want to talk to you." And he goes, "Oh, yeah, just finish your conversation. You know, we're your friends over there." And I said, "I just want to talk to you, you know." So he's all done, and he comes over, and I'm listening to, you know, he's been talking. I said, "Hey, so, you know," we start to, and like they talk about in the book, and it says, when you go to start to do an amends, you don't just jump right into the amends. You kind of have a little bit of a conversation to kind of feel everybody out. So I'm going to have the conversation first to feel Ray out, you know, because Ray's about 6'3", 6'4", 240, 250, big boy. And I look at Ray, and I said, "Well, Ray, now, you know, so, well, you know, I'm a teacher. What are you doing for a living?" He goes, "Oh," he says, "I'm a state cop." I said, "Oh, really?" you're gonna stay calm. And I stop for a second, look up at the sky, look up at God, and say, oh my God, yeah, you think you're funny, don't you? Yeah. I'm not gonna tell Stan Kopp that when I was when I was 17 years old, I stole his football shoes. I don't know how this is gonna go. but I did. I looked at Ray, I gotta tell you that. You remember when you got back from the one game, the next practice, your shoes are missing? And just, yeah. Wasn't there something like, well, I had one, you had one, we both lost one? No, Ray, that's not the way it really happened. I panicked. I was living in fear. I told him that. I said, I was living in fear. I was going through a lot of things in my life. I didn't want anybody to, you know, I was afraid of how, and I knew that since you were a starter, they wouldn't say as much about you as they would about me. I said, I stole your shoes that time. He goes, oh. I said, and he goes, that's all right. That's all right. He says, I didn't even remember it. It's not part of my life. I said, it doesn't matter whether that's a part of your life today. It's been a part of my life since it happened. And when I told him that, I felt free from that. Those are kind of those little detail things. And the last thing I really want to touch on, as far as that goes, because I talked about the fact that when we're doing these events, you know, I talked about that one with my wife. You know, I felt pretty good after making it, apologizing, realizing that I had broken up that relationship with her best friends. Add 20-some years to it. One day, I'm just walking along, and God says to me, you know, you never made amends to them. You made amends to your wife for what you did, but you never made amends to them. And so I, at an outing where they were all there, but we were kind of distant, I pulled them to the side, different ones, and I apologized, and I made amends for the things I had done 30 years earlier, 25 years earlier when I did that. When I ripped on them and I said all those nasty things about them and their families and all the other things I did in order to make myself feel better, I told them. I'm going to tell you what happened. Within a month, her girlfriends called my wife back up. And now they go on trips for whole weekends together again. They go back to those kind of things. But see, I'm not sure when it was ready for me to do that. I know that God has a plan on these steps. Yeah, as you've heard on my earlier steps, I believe that there's, you know, the different speeds that are working. But he knew at that moment it was the right time for me to come back and admit to these people of the things I did and apologize to it. And because of that, it reopened this unbelievable relationship that my wife has with them, and they have forgiven me for my behavior. But I had to do it. And I didn't even realize, I felt I had done well enough. So if you're new, understand this is a journey. You know, these steps... You know, we talk about it. Next week we're going to talk about 10, 11, 12. We're going to talk about the fact that in number 10, you know, we can make that immense, you know, right away. We can see what's going on in our life. But I'm going to tell you right now, when it comes down to it, I've really got to look and understand that God's going to open up these little things for me if I'm paying attention to the world he has in front of me. You know, I'm a believer that God's not pushing me in a certain direction. He has a direction he wants me to go, but he gives me the freedom of choice to go that whatever direction. And in order to go the right way, I have to have my heart and my soul opened up to not only him, but to you people in order to make the right direction. And when I do that, you know, it's just amazing. I'm going to finish with a story, and it has nothing to do with the eighth and ninth step. But I want to show you that how God works in this program for all of us, and that is, some of you guys might have even met the kid. He was in Erie for about 3 years, going to college in Barron. A kid named Matt, great kid. I sponsored him. He was going to meetings with us. He jumped in. He did everything I wanted him to do. He followed the directions. His grades started exploding. He moved after he was all done, you know, he moved back to Pittsburgh. And I would talk to him on occasion. And then he met a young lady. And Matt and I, he always knows that spiritual connection we've always had together. But Matt, when I talked to him, he was going to be getting married. And I felt really bad because my wife and I had scheduled in April a cruise. So we couldn't make it to his wedding. And I felt really bad because he was such a close person to me. But then he called me back after that. He said, hey, I'm saying, guess what? We had to cancel the wedding because of the number of people they were going to have. They couldn't have their wedding. So he said, we're probably not going to have a big wedding. We're going to have a small wedding. And I usually see him at Cook's Forest. And I hadn't seen him and talked to him for like 2 months. And the other day, I was leaving Lowe's, buying stuff for my home projects. And I'm just about to get on the 90, and God says to me, why don't you call Matt? It was about 10 o'clock in the morning this last Saturday. I said, oh, okay, I'll call Matt. That's how I work it. God says, call somebody, I call. It doesn't matter who it is. And I call Matt, and Matt doesn't answer the phone. I said, oh, okay. Probably he likes to fly fish and like do stuff like that. I said, oh, he's probably fishing. Well, a minute later, he called me back. And the first thing Matt says to me is Dan, is everything all right? I'm like, yeah. Well, what'd you call me for? I said, because you know me. I was driving on the road, and God said, call you. And Matt says to me, you know where I am right now. I said, no, Matt, where are you? He says, I'm getting dressed right now to get married. And he goes, you didn't know it, did you? I go, no. He goes, only God can do those kind of things where he puts that moment directly into my heart. Those are the kind of things that happened when I started getting rid of those things that were holding me back, making those amends. If I don't make those amends, that soul isn't free to find those moments where he wants to use me and wants me to be part of. He was so touched by me calling him before he was getting married. Now that connection is going to stay there probably the rest of our lives. So that's all I have to say. Thanks.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks.
So now we're going to open this up to our question and answer portion. Who's got a question for Dan? Go ahead and just unmute yourself if you've got a question to ask.
Hi, everyone. I'm Helen. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Helen.
Hey, Helen.
Oh, Dan. Jeez, you just got me right where I live. My very first question, though, and it's really an important one. Could I be your aunt so that I could get that kind of work?
You can.
That's
if you need anything, just let me know. I'll be there. I'll be there.
Thank you. It sounded as you were talking about your father-in-law. It sounded like it was important that he accept your amends and that you could mend that relationship. Did you have any amends that you made that absolutely were not accepted by the person that you were making amends to?
Absolutely. None that I can tell you that occurred. There was a few that when we talk about amends, I really was not going to go back and make. I had a boss back there that I wanted to make amends to, and I tried to get a hold of him, but he never. I did connect with him a couple times, so I'm assuming that because he, even though he knew it was me, he wasn't open to have a conversation. He was living in the middle of nowhere, West Virginia. And he was my manager that I pulled over the counter at 84 Lumber and took him to the ground. And I don't think he let that one go. So I mean, I kind of like put in there, hey, I want to talk to you about, and his response was like, basically, no, no conversations here. And so I'm assuming that immense, it wasn't going to happen, and he wasn't going to accept it. So that can happen, but I felt that I did, but by opening that up, I made and did the things that I needed to do that were suggested to me.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks.
Who's next? Who's got a question for Dan next?
Hey, Jim, alcoholic.
Hey, Jim.
Thanks again, Dan. So let's say gonna make an amends to someone haven't seen in quite some time. It's not planned or unplanned, either way.
Yeah.
And it comes time. Is it? Should we always, leading up to the amends part, let them know why we're making the amends, that we're, you know, that we're in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's this thing called Step 9, and that's what I'm doing.
Well, I don't, to be honest, when I make my amends, I don't do it that way. I know that some people do it that way, and I kind of want to do it where he accepts it because it's the right thing to do. It's where it's part of it, and that it's not me being forced to do it. Sometimes when I hear that, and that's for me. I would feel uncomfortable. It's almost like I'm trying to grab leverage, and that's the old Dan. The old Dan wants to have some kind of leverage in this deal. And for me, I kind of like to say, you know, hey, I want to talk about the past. I talk about the things that happened, and I lay it out there, and then I make the amends. Like, you know, the things that I did, I apologize. If you need me to do something for you, let me do that. And if he comes back and they say this has happened, so it's and they'll say to me, like, so out of this curiosity, what's brought this on? Which brought this change in you? You know, because you're actually a nice guy now. You know, I don't feel like we're gonna like roll around the street in a fight. You know, and I'm like, well, I got sober and then went to AA, and I'm working the steps and making amends as part of the steps I work, and that's how I handle that.
Thank you.
Who's next?
Beautiful outside.
Sure is. Anybody?
All right, I'm going to have to say something at least for 2 minutes. Dan, thanks again. That was terrific. Sorry, I apologize to everybody for sleeping in and not opening up the door for a couple of minutes before. But it's definitely God working in my life because you did a great 8th and 9th step. It was terrific. I want to thank you. My question is, when you're working with somebody and how do you deal with, like, I'm never going to do that one. You can send me directly to wherever. Doesn't matter. I'm not doing that.
Well, I've had that happen on a few occasions. And I'm like, hey, I'm the kind of sponsor who will say, you know, my sponsor did not grab me and drag me to those places. And because he didn't, I believe I'm still here. You know, I believe it, you know, in sponsorship, I don't sponsor anybody the same way. I kind of like when you start meeting and you start connecting, you get that understanding of some key people need to be pushed a little bit and some people need to be, hey, nope, that's all right. If it's meant to be, you'll find that moment, you know, but do me a favor. If that moment comes, will you take it? If you're there and you feel the connection and that it happens, will you do it? And most of the time they'll say, yeah, I think I would. I just don't feel like I have it in me right now. And I'm like, well, the other thing I tell them is that if you feel like after a period of time that it's still wearing on you, that you can still feel it, we need to revisit this. You know, we need to look at that. I said, the other thing that happens with these steps and with that kind of situation, sometimes what happens is we think as sponsors that this is a priority one here, and God's looking down going, oh, no, yeah. That I got these three here that I want him to do first, because when he does those, he'll feel that relief that allows him to do this one. And that's what's happened for me, and that's what, and that's how I work with my guys.
Thanks, Dan. Earlier when you were talking about, it was funny, you were talking about, you made this list of amends and there were like pages and pages and pages of it. Other than laughing, what? How did your sponsor deal with that?
What he did was he said, put them in groups, and then we'll prioritize the ones in the groups of each group. So it kind of broke them down into different things. I did, you know, I won't lie. You know, I get a kick out of people because they look at you today and they go, "Oh, I can't believe you would do those things." You know, the majority of things I did, even in my first year of marriage, as far as illegal activities, would still have me in probably jail today. You know, because of some of the rules and some of the things that happened. I can't go back and find every person I sold anything to. Okay. I can't go back and do that. What I did is that because of the age groups or different things, I think that God's plan was like, okay, part of your amends is I'm going to have you work with young people, be a teacher, be a coach, be a guide. That's part of what I want you to do is I want you to be that leader. You know, most of my players I've coached, you know, I don't tell them I'm a, but they know that I don't drink. They'll say, "Hey, coach, going out this week?" "No, I don't drink. I got important things to do in life. You know, I'm not letting alcohol and that drug things hold me back from reaching my goals." And they're like, "Oh, okay, coach." You know, and so those kind of things that are out there are the gifts that we get from this fellowship. I don't have to go around telling everybody in the world that I was in the program, but I can act like I'm in the program. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Dan.
Hey, Dan, this is Jack. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jack.
You mentioned, I think, that you talked about grouping your amends together. How would those groups, were they like of similar amends, or were they like severity, or how did you categorize
them? They were by severity. Yes, they're by severity. And kind of what, like, you know, it's kind of like when you see I'm trying to think what it's called, my brain's fried right now, but whether that's chemistry, where you see the interaction of the different circles of things, and there's always those few that connect over top of them that are, some are in this and some are in that, but they're still part of their little, and it amazed me that as I started going through there, yeah, God had, you know, people show up in my life. I can remember apologizing to one of my best friends. And he's like, I said, for my behavior and how I acted. And I was in the, he said to me, you know, you weren't, you know, it wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad. And then, you know what he did about 3 days later? he calls me back up. He says, "Lacko, I for 3 days after you did that, after you said that to me, after you did, I look back on the life that we had and the behaviors that you did." He says, "Wow, I didn't realize how crazy you were." You know, I'm like, "Well, yeah, that's why I'm in the program. That's why I'm doing this. It wasn't because I was like, on the wings of angels here, you know." And it's so nice, you know. And actually, we're still. That guy, I became his. I ended up being his best man at his wedding. You know, these gifts of sobriety, man, they're incredible. Early night.
Sorry.
Sometimes we just get lucky, Dan.
Well, all right. I hope you heard something tonight that maybe opened up a little thing inside you. That's what happened to me with early sobriety. You know, I didn't learn about, you learn about the steps and you learn about making amends to your sponsor. But you learn about this ones who talk about it in the meetings, in the discussion groups, the old timers that were there that talked about their experience, strength, and hope, and the things that they went through when they talked about, you know, when I would go to the step meeting with these guys, and I'd go to, you know, and they would talk about real situations in their life and how they got through them. When they did that, they gave me hope that I could get through them. That the things that were inside me that I thought I was going to be carrying with me my whole life. Oh my God, I don't think I'd be here if I wouldn't. But I also know that sometimes God left them on me to motivate me, to push me, to make me, you know, continue to achieve. And then he said, okay, now I need you to let this go. I need you to finally let this go. And, you know, like I say with my father-in-law, you know, I think I told a story about going home from the rehab for Christmas, and my father-in-law, who wanted my wife to leave me, when he heard that I was coming to their house for Christmas, I opened the front door and there was a keg of beer there.
Oh.
And I went to my brother-in-law and I said, hey, what's the keg? I've been here before. I never had a keg here for Christmas. And they're like, well, we've never seen a keg here before either. And then I looked over at him and I saw the eye contact. And I knew that he wanted me to drink, because the deal was that if I picked up another drink, my wife had to leave me. Mm-hmm. And so I walked up to him and I said, I know why you got the keg. And I looked at him and I said, you know, I was thinking about drinking today. But now that I know that you want me to drink, I'm not drinking. And I said, you just wasted your money on a keg. And I walked away, you know. So that was my early not making amends with my father-in-law. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Dan.
Thank you, guys. And thanks for getting us all on here, because I thought I was home free.